At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing, dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today, on this frigid January day here in the Chicago suburbs, we are inciting a coping riot, episode 114 of this podcast. I'm going to be talking about, later on in the show, kind of revisiting a few topics. In the sociology segment, we're going to be talking about leadership and interaction with one pagan leader specifically, and maybe some warning signs for how to identify potential problems with folks in your life, with leaders, that kind of thing. And also in the spirituality segment, going to be revisiting some topics that I've talked about on the blog and the show last year regarding sort of how to cope with, news media and a lot of negativity and stuff that's around sort of culture right now in a more spiritual way. But I did want to go ahead and get straight to those news headlines. But I will say this news segment is going to be a little different.
Inciting a newsworthy riot.
An article came out yesterday on January 6th in the New York Times by the columnist Nicholas Kristof. And its title kind of got to me. It was called Why 2017 Was the Best Year in Human History. And before you think, oh, Firelight is about to read a column by a Trump supporter who is loving everything that happened in 2017. Let me go ahead and, sorry. That's my new dog. His name is Eggsy. And he has taken up residence in the Riot podcasting studio. He would like to make himself known. Anyways, but no, I am not going to read you an article by a columnist who is espousing the benefits of Trumponomics. On the contrary, Kristof wanted us to take a look at the events of 2017 on a more global scale. Per his words, I will quote him here. We all know that the world is going to hell. Given the rising risk of nuclear war with North Korea, the paralysis in Congress, warfare in Yemen and Syria, atrocities in Myanmar, and a president who may be going cuckoo, you might think 2017 was the worst year ever. But you'd be wrong. In fact, 2017 was probably the very best year in the long history of humanity. Pretty big statement from Mr. Kristof. But he does go on to substantiate it. He says, a smaller share of the world's people were hungry, impoverished, or illiterate than at any time before. A smaller proportion of children died than ever before, the proportion disfigured by leprosy, blinded by diseases like trachoma, or suffering from other ailments also fell. We need some perspective as we watch all of this going on in Washington. And so today's news segment is about some of the best things that happened in 2017. Obviously, just because it affects my community specifically, I want to go over some of the great things that happened in the LGBT community, as well as some awesome scientific breakthroughs. But I did throw this out on social media, and there were a lot of stories that I hadn't thought about including that I'll also be talking about as well. But more from the Kristof article. Every day, the number of people around the world living in extreme poverty, which is living on less than $2 a day, goes down by 217,000, according to calculations by Max Roser of Oxford University. He's an economist who runs a website called Our World in Data. From that data also, every day, 325,000 more people gain access to electricity and 300,000 more gain access to clean drinking water every single day because of our advances in technology and our reach across the world. As recently as the 1960s, a majority of the human population had always been illiterate and lived in extreme poverty. Now fewer than 15% are illiterate, and fewer than 10% live in extreme poverty. In another 15 years, illiteracy and extreme poverty will be mostly gone. After thousands of generations, they are pretty much disappearing on our watch. Since 1990, the lives of more than 100 million children have been saved by vaccinations, diarrhea treatment, breastfeeding promotion, and other simple steps. A psychology professor at Harvard named Steven Pinker says in his upcoming book, Enlightenment Now, quote, "Intellectuals hate progress." He's referring to the reluctance to acknowledge gains. And it feels weird, especially in a week where our president has gone, it seems, into a fit of mental instability with his tweet storms about how he's a very stable genius and all of his pundits. I mean, he literally had a press conference to deny being stupid. So that's the world that we're living in. And it feels really, really weird to talk about progress and acknowledge progress. But if you'll remember from a lot of what I said last year, part of coping, and again, today is inciting a coping riot, part of coping with the tweet storms and the nuclear standoff with North Korea and what's going on in Palestine over Jerusalem and, you know, all of these terrible, terrible things, the way to cope with it, at least the way that I know to cope with it, is to stay informed and to acknowledge everything in its proper context, to acknowledge negative news stories in their proper context. You know, when the president is running off at the mouth, what is the context here? Stay informed. Can he do the things he says he's going to do? Can other people do the things they say they're going to do? What other things are happening in the world that maybe we should be acknowledging as well? Professor Roser, the same psychology professor who said that intellectuals hate progress, also noted that there was never a news headline that said the Industrial Revolution is happening. We never realize that great major changes happen in the moment. This was a pretty big year for the LGBT community, not only here in the United States, where a lot of people are fearful and not unrightfully so of their rights being challenged or taken away, or rights that are on the cusp of being given not coming to fruition. But again, it's good to see progress in its larger context. Australia, Germany, and Malta legalized marriage equality in 2017. That means a total of 26 countries have passed marriage equality laws in the last 18 years. And this year, Taiwan also set the stage to legalize same-sex marriage beginning in 2019. This was a big one for me. And anybody that was around my social media feeds in November remembers me freaking out. But more out LGBT people won U.S. elections than ever before in the history of the United States. More out people that are in the LGBT community were appointed to public office for the first time in history. More than half of the 71 openly LGBT candidates who ran for office this year won their races in November. Among the victors were many history-making trans candidates, which it's so, so important that even in a marginalized community like the LGBT community, it's important to remember that there are people that there are the most marginalized inside of that community, and those are trans people and LGBTQ folks of color, but specifically trans women of color. But among these were Lisa Middleton in Palm Springs, California, Danica Rome in Virginia, Andrea Jenkins in Minneapolis, and Tyler Titus in Erie, Pennsylvania. The international LGBT community also saw some big political wins in 2017. Anna Brnabic was elected as the first openly gay and first female prime minister of Serbia. Leo Varadkar became the first openly gay prime minister of Ireland, and Tomoya Hosada became the Japan's first out trans elected official. A lot of countries passed anti-discrimination laws. Canada passed Bill C-16, which bans discrimination against transgender people in all provinces, before Trudeau issued a historic apology to Canadian victims of anti-LGBT discrimination. Oh, Canada. Want Trudeau so bad. To be the president here. Not anything untoward towards your beautiful prime minister. India's Supreme Court ruled that sexual orientation is protected under the Constitution's right to privacy provisions, which experts believe will eventually lead to the repeal of Section 377, which criminalizes homosexuality. And there was actually a similar case here in the United States that eventually led to more rights being given to LGBT individuals, couples, that helped pave the way for marriage. It was a Texas case, and it was regarding privacy, that basically what LGBT folks do in the privacy of their own home can't be punished by law. And that was just, like, I believe in the 90s. Though the reforms haven't yet been made official, Sri Lanka also vowed to decriminalize homosexuality and enact policies aimed at protecting LGBT citizens. So if you plan on traveling abroad, it is a more rainbow-friendly world. Many U.S. municipalities stepped up their LGBT protections as well, especially, it has to be said, in light of the danger of folks like Donald Trump and Mike Pence in office. This year, while enacting LGBT anti-discrimination protections at the federal level seemed virtually impossible, non-discrimination ordinances were passed in municipalities across the nation, including places like Morgantown, West Virginia, which is home to West Virginia University, pretty big college there, Birmingham, Alabama, and DePere, Wisconsin. Meanwhile, school boards across the country enacted protections for LGBT students and staff, and California approved LGBT-inclusive textbooks for public elementary school students. So good. Focusing on some major trans community wins for a second, Donald Trump tried to ban trans people from serving in the military, but in the end, those efforts were blocked. Big stuff. Denmark became the first country in the world to remove trans identities from its list of mental health disorders in 2017. And the community saw some advances in visibility, too. International supermodel Teddy Quinlivan came out as trans, and National Geographic featured an openly trans person on its cover for the first time, just to name a few. This year, for the first time, more than half of Americans also reported that they'd support their kids' transition if they came out as trans. More than half, that's awesome. Intersex people gained much-needed visibility. 2017 was a big year for that for the intersex community. America's first intersex birth certificate was issued in New York. Supermodel Hannah Gaby Odiel. So sorry. Ms. ODL came out as intersex, and former U.S. Surgeon General joined international human rights organizations in calling for an end to involuntary surgery on intersex babies. Lots and lots of folks came out. Greater visibility leads to greater equality, and so famous people coming out should always be counted as a win, unless you're Kevin Spacey and try to use it to block the fact that you're a rapist. And a pedophile, probably. Among those to publicly announce they're part of the LGBT community this year were San Francisco 49ers assistant coach Katie Sowers, who is the first openly LGBT coach in all of U.S. men's professional sports, Barry Manilow, Shannon Purser, who's Barb from Stranger Things, and Tyler, the Creator, among many, 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 many others. Big stuff in pop culture. Moonlight won the Oscar for Best Picture, which is wonderful and awesome. And it just kind of put salt in the wound that Brokeback Mountain didn't win and lost to Crash for some reason, but we won't talk about that. There was a ton of LGBT inclusive characters and scenes, including some out-and-out love scenes, which we never see on TV, for LGBT folks on the show American Gods. Supergirl had lots of visibility. Basically, everything on ABC is hella LGBT this year. Once Upon a Time, great lesbian characters. The introduction of a queer Muslim character on The Bold Type. Big year for LGBT visibility in pop culture. The world's first two-drug regimen designed to treat HIV was approved by the FDA, while the CDC acknowledged for the first time this year that people whose HIV loads are undetectable can't transmit the virus. Lots of HIV and AIDS knowledge released this year, which is great for LGBTQ people and people of color, as it disproportionately affects those populations. A study released this fall also found that PrEP is safe for gay and bi teens who are among those most at risk of contracting HIV, and new advancements were made in the fight to end new HIV infections among women. This year also saw the year-long ban on gay men donating blood lifted in the UK thanks to quicker testing methods. In racial equality news, a really amazing study came out in October of last year. That discusses race and some long-held notions about how the races came to be and how different skin colors developed and all of that. There's a lot of long-held, really racist assumptions based on skin color that have been scientifically proven wrong, according to a groundbreaking study in the journal Science, published in October of 2017. Sarah Tishkoff, PhD of the University of Pennsylvania, wrote a paper titled Loci Associated with Skin Pigmentation Identified in African Populations. The researchers identified the genes linked to the diversity of human skin color and when and where those genes emerged. She says, quote, "The fact is that many of these variants that we found to be associated with light skin that are really common now in Eurasians originated in Africa. Here are these genes that impact skin color, and they have an African origin, even the ones associated with light skin." Tishkoff and her team had been studying genetic diversity among different African populations when they realized the strikingly vast range of skin colors present in African people, from the darker tones that are commonly associated with people in Africa to the very pale skin commonly linked with Europeans. She goes on to say, quote, in Ethiopia, you'll find people with very dark skin tones who have this Nilo-Saharan ancestry who originated in southern Sudan. And then you'll see people not that far away who have pretty light skin tones. Her team wanted to know what genes were linked to those different skin tones and whether they were the same genes linked to light or dark skin elsewhere in the world. And so they compared the skin tone in the DNA of 1,600 people from ethnically and genetically diverse populations all across Africa to find those genes. To capture skin tone accurately, they used a color meter to measure the light reflectance on each individual's inner arm, where the sun is at least likely to alter the natural skin color. Then, by comparing those observations with their analysis of each person's genome sequence, they pinpointed four genes whose genetic codes showed significant variation between people with different skin colors. The vast diversity of human color, they found, is largely due to a few tiny tweaks to the gene sequences in these regions. I'll link to the rest of the study in the show notes. Suffice to say, there's some really interesting stuff in there regarding possibly the first population of humans and where they migrated to and how those variations in skin color kind of coalesced into different groups throughout the world and were only very recently sort of rediscovered in human history as folks started traveling again after they kind of found the place that they wanted to live for, you know, 80,000 years or so. And that's where racism comes from. It's tiny discrepancies in four genes. That's nuts. And it also says that we all kind of came from Africa, which a lot of folks already knew. I don't have much to say. I don't have much to say other than to sit here and rant about racism, which we won't do. As I said, I put the call out on social media to ask, what was your favorite news headline of 2017? What was the best news for you? And a few folks wrote back. Jordan Stratford, you might recognize that author's name, especially if you have kids. Jordan Stratford wrote in and said, the cholera vaccine or the end of Sahara desertification due to the multinational Green Line of reforestation or the near closing of the ozone layer hole. Globally, both AIDS deaths and HIV infection rates are way down. Leprosy is now 100% curable. The whole planet is healthier, more free, more educated, longer lived, and we have removed a number of species from the endangered list due to billions of hectares of dedicated wildlife habitat conservation. Everything is better everywhere, except climate change and the U.S., generally speaking. Corey Hutchison of New World Witchery wrote in, The advances with CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, and the continuing developments with gravitational waves were big news to me. Also, the broader resistance movement, from the Women's March and Black Lives Matter to the rogue national parks and NASA accounts. I'd almost forgotten that happened in 2017. And I'd say the huge backwards steps in environmental policy generally. Oh, and I think Voyager left the solar system finally, and the Cassini crash on Saturn was amazing. And Kathleen Borealis of Borealis Meditation wrote in and said, pardon my language, I still think that fucking dinosaur can't be real. What was your favorite best story of 2017? What was the biggest advance for minority cultures, for society and technology and science and math and STEM and inventions and robotics? And what was the best thing that you felt happened in 2017? Sort of seeing the mess of Washington in the greater context of human achievement? I don't know. I think that's pretty helpful. Staying informed, staying aware of what all is happening in the world, not just the latest crazy news headline, is my way of coping. If I know that the rest of the world is running smoothly and doing well and we're prospering and we're thriving as a species, if we're on the whole trying to make each other's lives a better place, which it looks like we are on the whole, then seeing the 24-hour news coverage of war and famine and plague and pestilence and all of that, it puts it into broader context. It makes me realize that a lot of it's for clicks. A lot of it's for eyeballs. Hearing good news isn't a great way to get people to tune in. If you push the blood, if you push the gore, if you push the fear, that'll get people to tune in. And it's not that you shouldn't be afraid of things like a nuclear standoff with North Korea or, you know, the president blithely announcing that Jerusalem now belongs to Israel. But in the broader context of human achievement and revolution and resistance and change, you can see which potatoes are small and which are large. And now to get a little bit smarter with the word of the day.
Inciting a verbal riot.
Continuing with the 2017 retrospective theme, Merriam-Webster's 2017 word of the year was feminism. The word was a top lookup throughout the year, with several spikes that corresponded to various news reports and events. The general rise in lookups tells us that many people are interested in the word. Specific spikes give us insight into some of the reasons why. Feminism spiked following news coverage of the Women's March on Washington last January and other related marches held around the country and internationally. And follow-up discussions regarding whether the march was feminist and what kind of feminism was represented by organizers and attendees. The word spiked again when Kellyanne Conway said during an interview that she didn't consider herself a feminist. In this case, the definition of feminism was itself the subject of the news story, an invitation for many people to look up the word. Interest in the dictionary definition of feminism was also driven by entertainment this year. We saw increased lookups after the release of both Hulu's series The Handmaid's Tale and the film Wonder Woman. More recently, lookups of feminism have been increasing in conjunction with the many accounts of sexual assault and harassment in the news. Many women have come forward to share their stories with journalists, and many more women joined in on social media using the Me Too hashtag to say that they too have been affected by such behavior. The string of breaking news stories regarding the resignations, firings, or dismissals of men who have been charged with sexual harassment or assault has kept this story in the news. Today's definitions of feminism read, quote, the theory of the political, economic, and social equality of the sexes, and organized activity on behalf of women's rights and interests.
Inciting a literary riot.
I wanted to share with you all a few of my very favorite books from 2017. Some of these were published in 2017, and some of these were just books that I happened to read and enjoy in 2017. I'm not really going in any particular order other than the order that Goodreads told me that I read them last year. I did want to go ahead and start off with one of the big ones that came out last year, Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman. If you've read books on mythology, Edith Hamilton's mythology comes to mind, Arthur Cotterell's Encyclopedia of Mythology somewhat, you know, just sort of retellings of myths in the author's sort of own tone and voice, you're going to really love Neil Gaiman's Norse Mythology. I will tell you, if you are looking for Neil Gaiman's sort of signature childlike, oh gosh, magic. I don't really know how to describe Neil Gaiman's writing style other than like precious and sacred to me. But he tends to write from a youthful, innocent place of discovery. And that place of discovery tends to be that the world is dark and full of nasty. That's not really here. What's here is a very, very well-written series of retellings of classic Norse myths. Many you've probably heard before, and some you probably haven't. I will tell you, there are some really interesting twists to some of the stories. To be perfectly honest, I am not a scholar on Norse mythology, nor do I pretend to be. So perhaps these are wildly, horribly off base, or maybe these are just the versions of the stories and I never heard the real endings. Either way, I will tell you the ending of sort of that classic story of Ragnarok is very Gaiman. I loved it. And I'd never heard this story of Ragnarok, the myth of the end of the world, the way that Gaiman tells it. I also have to say, the discussions of the scenes that involve either Loki or Thor, you can tell that Neil Gaiman loves these characters, really loves writing about Thor. And Thor has this comedic presence in these stories that I have never appreciated in Norse myth before. I truly enjoyed how Thor at times came off as like a frat bro that dives headfirst into adventure rather than this like stoic god of thunder. You know, the thing about Gaiman is that he can bring stories and characters to life. And I don't know that he's going to tell you anything new, but he is definitely going to leave you entertained. And like I said, several of these are classics that if you've read books on Norse mythology before, you will have heard these stories. I can guarantee you, you've never heard them like Neil Gaiman tells them. Another one that I read last year, that I really took a couple of you know, a long week to read and marinate on, is The Book of the Unnamed Midwife by Meg Ellison. She's been on the show before. Big fan of hers. Friend of the show. Friend of mine. Love her to pieces. I have to say, if you guys are appreciating what Hulu is doing with the vibrancy of The Handmaid's Tale brought to screen, I urge you to go out and read The Book of the Unnamed Midwife. It is incredibly powerful, feminist, representational, important storytelling. It is a brilliant, brilliant novel from one of the greatest new voices in science fiction that I think I've ever read. And I'm not just saying that because I know her now. I'm saying that because I truly, truly appreciate the writing. And I have to say, before I interviewed her for the show, I did a very quick, you know, read through, skim of the book, try to get through it just to get, you know, be able to have something to talk about with somebody I'd never spoken to before. But really going back and taking a few days to read it and really, you know, chew on the concepts, the ideas, the pace, the novel itself, it's just a pleasureful reading experience. And I'm not going to say that it's an easy reading experience, and it's definitely not a comfortable reading experience, but there is a pleasure in the nearness and urgency of the storytelling. It's impactful and powerful and important. It's going to start off like a lot of post-apocalyptic stories start off. The human race is killed off. You don't really need to know why. That part doesn't matter. What matters is the fact that for the first time, I feel like we get a sense of what it would be like to be a woman, a minority, a person without a typically important role in society. Basically, the idea of being in a post-apocalyptic world and not being a straight white guy. You know, there's a lot of post-apocalyptic stories out there, a lot of zombies and illnesses and fantasy epic, you know, that all deal with the end of the world and what happens after the end. And they all tend to be about white, cisgendered, male experiences. You know, nobody ever goes to the bathroom. Nobody ever has to worry about birth control, pregnancy. What would happen if women were scarce? And it tells us something about the human condition that I don't think I've ever read or seen in film, in television, or in a story before. And I very much look forward to this book blowing up even bigger than it did. It won the Philip K. Dick Award, which is huge. That's awesome. I very much look forward to Netflix fighting over the rights to turn this into its own miniseries, because I would be relishing the chance to watch it. I did reread Go Set a Watchman, and I reread it because of what last year made me feel. And like a lot of you, Go Set a Watchman by Harper Lee, the same author of To Kill a Mockingbird. And Go Set a Watchman is the story of a scout all grown up, coming back home and realizing that her childhood wasn't exactly the childhood that she remembered. And a lot of people had a complaint with Go Set a Watchman because, you know, the father figure in the story turns out to maybe not have been this paragon of justice and equality that Scout had grown up thinking that he was. And, you know, maybe some of the adults in the story weren't quite as pure of heart as you're led to believe. But I think that that's okay. I think that that's okay to be challenged to remember that the way that we remember our childhood isn't actually how it happened. And I think that, like a lot of you, I was still in a place of reeling from what happened in 2016. And it took me most of 2017 to kind of get sad, get depressed, get angry, and get mad about it, and then start doing something about it. And Go Set a Watchman was something that I needed in my life last year to kind of go back, and I listened to it. I love the audiobook version. Reese Witherspoon reads it, and I just, if they ever do a live version of Go Set a Watchman, She needs to play Adult Scout. I'm telling you, it was brilliant. If you can listen to the audiobook, I recommend it. But it was so necessary for me because I, again, like a lot of you probably did, had to have really tough conversations with my own family, with my own loved ones. And I think that I needed to remember that it's okay for those folks to not be perfect and to not be the people that I remembered them being or thought that they were. But it's sometimes okay to accept them how they are, and sometimes it's okay to let people go. And I needed a reminder that contextually loving somebody is okay too. A series that I discovered not quite last year, but more books from the series came out last year. Really fun, really funny, really quick reads. Though I do highly recommend doing them as audiobooks because it's sort of put out by Amazon and Audible, and it's a series that's really made to be listened to because it's fun and fast and funny and a fantasy series. It's the Magic 2.0 series by Scott Meyer. I read his book number 4 last year, Fight and Flight. But if you want a fun, silly version of The Matrix, but it's set in a fantasy world and everybody's having way more fun with it than anybody in The Matrix did. Imagine if Neo had decided, it's The Matrix. I'm going to go back in time and be a wizard in the Middle Ages. It's kind of the concept. It's a lot more funny than I'm probably making it out to be. But if you've got those Audible credits and you don't know what to do with them, the Magic 2.0 series by Scott Meyer, totally recommend it. Going back to mildly depressing yet surprisingly upbeat is My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry by Frederick Backman. I don't know what it was about me reading books last year that had to do with imperfect families, but this was a beautiful mix of fairy tales and grandmothers and the love of family and coming of age and figuring out that the world is both scarier than you thought it was and not scary at all. When you're a kid. Beautiful, gorgeous writing, funny, engaging. My Grandmother Asked Me to Tell You She's Sorry by Frederick Backman. One other book that I really want to talk about is The Rules of Magic by Alice Hoffman. If you liked Practical Magic, the movie or the book, and I am somebody that liked both for very different reasons. I liked Practical Magic, the book, in my personal humble opinion, it is not as good as Practical Magic the movie, but I did still enjoy the story for what it was, and I enjoyed it, I liked it, I would read it again. The Rules of Magic is better than Practical Magic either version, and that is a big thing to say, especially to a bunch of pagans, but The Rules of Magic is my very favorite Alice Hoffman book ever. And I am a huge Alice Hoffman fan. For years, I espoused the fact that her book, The Dove Keepers, was her opus. And that I didn't think that she was going to ever write something better than that because it was gut-wrenching and powerful and magical and feminist and just all these things. But oh man, going back and visiting the Owens family inside of the aunts and the family that you never got to know but always heard about in Practical Magic. Oh my gosh, it was gorgeous, heartbreaking, painful, magical storytelling. And I highly, 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 highly recommend, if you are looking for something to read, pick up The Rules of Magic by Alice Hoffman. Venna, literary maven, who you haven't heard from in a while, and I promise she'll be back. And I have been talking about wanting to go through, and we could never post this anywhere because it would probably violate all of the copyright laws. But what I want to do is go back through Practical Magic and The Rules of Magic and just flag every time Alice Hoffman gives us a bit of folklore or a spell or something. I want to flag it, and I just want to make my own personal Practical Magic Book of Shadows, because there are just some fun things to try. Things I'd heard about, things I'd never heard about, and I'm sure some stuff that Hoffman just made up. But it's fun, and it's amazing, and it's a brilliant piece of storytelling. Now, not to bore you, and I didn't create a fun little segue for this, and I know I don't normally talk about like movies or TV shows or anything like that on here, but I did want to give a quick rundown of a few things that I discovered in 2017. And I'm only going to list movies and TV shows that I discovered on streaming services, because I'm very conscious of the fact that for a lot of folks, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, whichever service or combination of services you use, it's a really economical way, and for some folks, it's the only way that they stream their media. So I didn't want to say, oh, go out and watch this movie, spend $20 on this and $20 on that. So I was really conscious about coming up with a list of things that were only on streaming services that I discovered last year that were fun and magical and enjoyable for a witchy pagan audience. Okay, so up first is my list from Netflix. So if you are a Netflix streaming customer, all of these titles are available to you. The first one was a movie called All Hallows Eve. And you guys know my love of fun, heartwarming Disney Channel style fare. This was fun, heartwarming Disney Channel style fare. about as Disney Channel as it gets without actually being on the Disney Channel. I think it was from something in Canada. I don't know. But All Hallows Eve really fills that spot you've been missing. If, like me, you wish that there had been a new Halloween Town with the real Marnie, because there's only three Halloween Town movies. I'm not going to hear this myth that there's a fourth one out there, because that's horse honky. If you've been missing the vibe of Halloween Town, you're gonna love All Hallows Eve. It's for 7-year-olds. Like, don't go into this expecting something deep. But it's fun. It's a girl. She discovers she's a witch and blah, 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 and magic and a mirror and a horrible ancestor. It's fun. Listen, it's fun. That's all you need to know. And you can download it. It's one of the ones that you can download it and take it with you. So if, like me, you got a commute on a train, you're not driving, you know, something to watch on your commute. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, it'll be something that I add to my Netflix queue and watch every Halloween. The other thing that came out around Halloween this year was a horror comedy called The Babysitter that has this weird dark fantasy take, because I think they try to summon Satan or something to be immortal or grant wishes. All I know is Robbie Amell is shirtless basically the entire movie, and that is just worth the price of admission. Oh my god, I'm trying really hard not to like lick my microphone right now. That guy is body goals, let me tell you. But it's really fun. It's, if you like something like Stranger Things, like, you know, kids dealing with dark forces, and also like creepy and appropriate dark humor and sexy gore somehow, this is the movie for you. Did I mention Robbie Amell is shirtless like the entire thing? Like, let me tell you, just like, I don't know, like, who oiled him up, or like, you know, who lit him, but that person deserves an Emmy. That's all I'm saying. I think I lost the point of this. Just watch The Babysitter. It's fun. It's not for kids. There's a kid that's a protagonist. This movie is not for kids. Like, people get like stabbed in the boob and stuff. Like, going back to something that totally is for kids. The first series that I want to talk about is The Worst Witch. They did a series out of it. If you love here I am forgetting Game of Thrones. Okay, you know that little girl on Game of Thrones who, like, plays a stone-cold badass, and I don't remember what house she's from. I'm sorry. I think it's a bear or something. I don't remember. She's on an island. Anyways, she was awesome. Well, she's the lead character of The Worst Witch, and she's real fun and real silly, and it's just an adorable, precious, precious little show. And I'm just telling you, you are going to start saying the words, "Oh, I forgot to do the fingers," like, every time you do anything remotely witchy. And that will make sense to you once you've watched The Worst Witch. But, like, even my husband, who really hates, like, corny, cheesy stuff, died laughing at that line. Like, it's just precious. And it's got just enough good people that take their job just seriously enough that it works. It's a lot of fun. Another movie called The Guardian Brothers. It has a lot to do with Asian, I think Chinese mythology and folklore. Really cute, really fun, sort of elemental story. Kind of has a Nickelodeon flair to it. The Guardian Brothers. It was fun. I mean, it was cute. Not, you know, blow me away great. Others on the list are better. But it was fun. If you've got kids and you're looking for something kind of witchy, folkloric, you know, magical to watch, it's a good time. Okay, I'm going to talk about this one because it counts. The Magic School Bus came back last year in a big way on Netflix. And I know that there's a lot of, like, grown-up, like, 30-something millennials that are hating on this because it doesn't, I don't know, feel like the original. That's garbage. It was a lot of fun. I watched it on the train to and from work. I don't know why. I have this, like, special place in my deep, dark, twisted, riotous soul for The Magic School Bus. There was just something so innocent and fun and amazing about the original story. And I gotta say, I love the new one. It's fun. It's fun. It's smart. It teaches you things. You know, it's got all the good people. Lily Tomlin's back. She plays Miss Frizzle. You've got a new Miss Frizzle. Yeah, it's all good. There's so much good. It's a lot of fun. And the bus is there. And it's a good time. And again, episodes that you can download. Neo-Yokio. This was a series. It's an anime. All about a world in which magical practitioners are a societal class. This takes place in kind of this fantastical alternate history present day that's somewhere between like New York and Tokyo. Neo-Yokio, get it? A lot of fun. Witchy, creepy, gothic, horror, magic, witchy. I think I just said all the right words. You're probably already downloading it. It's a lot of fun. It's really good. It's got just enough. It's the combination of Clueless and The Craft that you never knew that you needed. Like, it's the elitist nature of Clueless with the dark, twisty, like, dark magic of The Craft. So that was fun. Another series, and I talked about this on the blog years ago whenever they did it as a movie. Little Witch Academia now has seasons, and Netflix picked it up. There were, I think, 2 seasons put out last year, and a third's on its way. Little Witch Academia, it's another anime. Oh my God, for everybody that grew up loving Harry Potter, wanting to go to wizard school, well, this is witch school, and it's great. It's so good, so witchy, so adorable, so good. Good for adults, good for kids, good for everybody. I can't say enough good about it. The animation is just so spot on and unique and alive. The spells are fun. The lore is incredible. I gotta say, the season 2, I wasn't so... I didn't know what I was gonna think about all of the tech and stuff coming into it, but I just loved it. I loved every last little inch of screen time that I got with Little Witch Academia. So much fun. So much fun. Okay, last thing from Netflix. Castlevania came out it's another anime. Castlevania came out on Netflix, season 1. It's just a few episodes. I think it's like 4 episodes. Really beautiful, heartbreaking story. My husband was captivated. Again, he hates animation. Like, it takes a lot for him to like animation. Good, juicy, dark storytelling. This is really not for kids. It's really, really, really not for kids. And news just came out that season 2 has been greenlit and is on its way. Witchy, werewolves, vampires, sorcerers, all of the things. You know, if you were a fan of the games growing up, this will seem familiar territory to you. But if not, you know, it's going to be fun. The next one is actually on Amazon Prime. So if you have the Prime streaming service, this one's available to you. I fell in love, and I didn't watch it for a while. This is a new-to-me one. It's on its third season, which I went to go check my browsing history just to make sure that I was getting all the names and stuff right. And I just discovered they have a third season, and it just came out today, so I know what I'm doing for the next couple of days. This show is called Just Add Magic. Again, this is gonna be in that realm of you've got kids or you're a kid at heart and you like Saturday morning big bowl of cereal fare. It's fun. It don't think too hard about it. But I have to say, it does have kind of a dark twist to the story. That I was kind of surprised that it went there in season one and kind of in season two. Like it kind of goes to a little bit of a dark place, just kind of with the depth of what happens to some of these characters. But it's a really, really, really fun show. It's going to sound like a familiar premise, and it is. Three girls happen upon a magic book, realize that the stuff in it is real magic. The twist to this one is that they're all recipes. And so it's not, I know the words and I point at somebody and turn them into a parrot or something. No. This is edible practical magic, and it's the stuff that you do as a real witch. I mean, you know, I'm gonna bake a cookie and I'm gonna put intent and certain special ingredients in it, and you know, I'm going to have courage today or something like that. It's baking magic into food, and I've got to tell you, it made me want to go get you know, my magical witchy library refreshed with some good books on going to the grocery store and getting ingredients to make witchy food or to imbue my own food with witchiness. It's kind of a good show to, if you're looking for something to kind of boost your craft to the next level, or at least just be inspired to do something interesting and new and fun with your craft. This might be the show for you. It's called Just Add Magic. Like I said, there are now three seasons, and this one is on Amazon Prime. Okay, for folks with a Hulu account, there's going to be some... this is some new-to-me stuff, and some not-new-to-me stuff. I finally watched Firefly for the first time last year. I know. I get it. I'm a horrible bag of poop. But I finally watched Firefly last year. I get it. I'm a brown coat. I get it. I watched Firefly. I watched Serenity. I cried. It's so good. It's so good. It is the greatest thing that Joss Whedon, I think, might have ever done. Ever. And I think I only say that because we didn't get seven seasons to have weird, awkward badness in the middle that, like, you can judge it for. Like, it's just... it's like one of the most perfect things that's ever been created for TV. And I'm retroactively so angry that it was canceled, but like I'm retroactively angry, like two decades too late. Another fun little thing. It's 10 minutes long. It's a short film. It's animated. It's for kids. It's called The Bravest Knight. It is a gay love story aimed at kids. It's a little fairy tale. It's just like reading a little book. And I think it actually is a book, but they turned it into a cartoon. It's adorable, it's precious, it's inclusive. You need it. Legion. It's on the FX network, or you can stream it on Hulu. This is the story of Charles Xavier's son, Legion. But you're not supposed to know it's Charles Xavier's son because they don't really talk about that in the show. But they, like, imply it because, like, you see in this one scene that he has a wheelchair like his dad, but you don't see his face because he has a wheelchair, but we're not really sure if it's right. Like, in the main Marvel universe, or if this is, like, a sideways Marvel universe, or if it's, like a completely different universe that it's not Marvel, but you know, whatever. So anyways, it's weird, it's creepy, it's good, it's fantastic, it's sci-fi, it's inclusive, it's mutants, it's like, why aren't you downloading it already? Am I done convincing you? You need this. It's well acted. It is it's dark, twisty, challenging storytelling, and in that way that science fiction can. Something else that I really enjoyed last year was Preacher. It's on the AMC network, or again, you can stream it on Hulu. It is sort of a Western, sort of a fantasy, angels and demons. I mean, if you liked Supernatural, if you liked, some grittier graphic novel books, this is for you. A guy gets taken over by this not heavenly, not hellish, but whatever is in between that force, and his voice can command other people to do his bidding. And of course, neither heaven nor hell like this. Hijinks ensue. There's a vampire. There's a sassy ex. There's all sorts of fun. I recommend it. It's good. It's great. Do it. The only other thing that I could possibly recommend to you guys is Marvel Runaways and The Gifted. Both of them equally, in equal measure. Representational. Sci-fi. Mutants. X-Men. The Runaways is everything that you loved about the graphic novel from the early 2000s, which is still running today. The Gifted is everything you ever wanted the X-Men universe to be, but you couldn't because it was always a movie. It's so good. They're both so good. The Gifted and Runaways. That's Marvel. That's it for my movie, TV, streaming recommendations. I'm done. We've got one more segment and the show is over, I swear.
Inciting a spiritual riot.
Okay, so last year I did a show and kind of talked about the theme of spiritual protest last year. Not just one show, but a few shows had to do with spiritual and societal protest and doing things in your craft, in your politics, in your daily life to help you react in a healthy, angry if you needed to be, emotionally charged way to what we were all feeling last year and what we were all going through as a country, as a people, as a community last year. And today, I don't want to detract from that, but I want to tell you guys some of my own revelations that I had in doing that spiritual and societal protest work last year. I found that the best work that I did was on myself. The best craft that I did last year, the most effect that it had, the most effective craft that I worked last year was craft that I worked on myself. Spells, preparations, rituals that I did in groups or alone, but that were self-serving, that weren't projective. They were inner workings. They were to work on me. And I started to awaken to this in the days following the Donald Trump hex that, you know, I was very positive about participating in, and I would do it again last year. But what I found was that, I mean, I don't know from Adam if it did anything to the president. I mean, he's still president. But the thing is, the more that I thought about the idea of hexing Donald Trump or hexing a politician or hexing, I don't know, pro-life people that stand outside of Planned Parenthood and, you know, whatever. I mean, doing something projective to a person or a group or a cause or whatever that you disagreed with, the more that I thought about what is most effective about that wasn't the effect that it may or may not have on the subject of that spell, but the effect that it had on me. Because I think that what a lot of us have been feeling the last couple of years is a sense of helplessness, is a sense of not recognizing our neighbor, or maybe recognizing our neighbor clearly for the first time, and recognizing that they really are a person that believes the things that they say that they believe, and that does the things that they say that they do, and they're being honest about who they are. And that means that you have to be honest about the decisions that you make, about the people that you allow in your life and in the lives of your family. And that sparks a lot of tough feelings for a lot of people. But the most powerful thing that I felt last year was catharsis. Every time that I did a working towards a cause, I felt a sense of catharsis. I felt a sense of personal healing because I felt like I was doing something, but in the feeling of doing something, I did something to myself. The sense of helplessness, that void that you sit in of this is just happening and we're all just letting this happen, lifted, at least for a little bit. So today, I want to talk about some of the other spiritual work that I talked a little bit about on social media, but never really did any blogs or shows about. One of the big fun things that I did last year was I took a science experiment and I turned it into a spell. And I'm going to share it with you all. And I swear to God, if this ends up in a Llewellyn book anywhere, I am suing, okay? Because I'm the first to steal it and make it magical. So what I want all of you to do is go to your kitchen and get a tea bag. And I don't mean a fancy tea bag, not one of those triangles, not a little silk thing, not a fancy. I want you to go get like your cheap dollar, like cheap tea bag, like cheap, like cheaper than Lipton, like store brand, like cheap, you know, the kind with like the crappy cheesecloth thing, like with the staple and all of that and the string that doesn't really hold, like that thing. I'm going to go get that thing. Now I'm going to do a little blog post on how to do this. So if you need pictures, I can show you. But what I want you to do is cut off the top where that staple is, and it will open up into a tube. And I want you to pour the tea out, and I want you to just have the tube. And I want you to write down something that you want to be free of. And, you know, really spend a second, you know, thinking about a word or a phrase or an idea or a person or whatever that you want to be free of. And write it down on that tea bag. And then I want you to take the tea bag and I want you to sort of put your fingers in it and make it into a cylinder and stand it on its end. Stand it with one of the open ends down on the table. And then, and you can say whatever words you want, if or no words at all. I don't use any words. I want you to light the other end on fire. And it will fly away. And it will carry your problem with it. And it is one of the most fun, joyful, magical things that I have ever done because it really, you're making something fly. And it's just so freaking cool to go do magic that makes something fly. So Vina and I spent like $2 and got a big old thing of like green tea. And we spent like a whole afternoon doing this. It was so much fun. You're just like dumping, and we dumped out like all the tea. All the tea. And we spilled the tea and we did the tea and we spilled the tea and whatever. Never mind. This is not RuPaul's Drag Race. This is not RuPaul's Best Friend Race. Anyways, so we would, I mean, just, you know, after the first time, it's your eyes go wide, you become a six-year-old again, magic is real, you're Harry Potter, and all of that. And we just started writing down everything, just everything. I mean, you know, problems with money, or problems with this boss, or, you know, Donald Trump, or feeling helpless, or feeling scared, and like, you know, when you've got like 50 tea bags to go through, you just start like feeling things and writing them down just to watch them fly away. It's a lot of fun. You can do it with your kids. It is not going to burn your table. It is not going to burn whatever you're setting the teabag on, because by the time the flame gets down to the bottom of the teabag, it will fly away. I promise. It's the coolest thing. But I didn't really have much else to say in this segment other than I recommend, and if you disagree, super, great, awesome. Craft, your way. But the biggest thing that I took away from Projective Protest Magic last year wasn't that it created this bubble of mystical force that ousted all of the badness out of office. Because the thing is, if you try to oust all of the badness out of office, I mean, you're going to be like, I don't know, shooting bullets into water or something. I mean, it's just not going to... You're never going to get rid of all the bad. You're not. But you can build up your own light. Whenever you just see darkness around, when you see hopeless grossness all around, all in society, all in the media. And listen, I am somebody that CNN is basically what's on all the time at my house. I listen to NPR. I listen to probably 3 or 4 different NPR politics news podcasts a day. I read the news. I read New York Times. I read several different news sources every single day. I take in a lot of news. And I even have to say personally that sometimes I just need a freaking break from it. And I do a lot of this because, you know, I try to take in enough sources so that I can filter out what's sensational. And I try to read enough sources that I'm getting things that you might have missed. You know, that maybe some news source will pick up a story that other folks are overlooking. But in all of that, there's only so many times that I can read about the president sitting on the toilet and tweeting something awful and racist and horrible before I'm like, you know what? This is his like 7th one today. Me sending a curse at him is not going to get him out of office. It might make me feel better, but you know what else would make me feel better? Is doing some Just Add magic, you know, brewing up a confidence tea, just to borrow from The Rules of Magic by Alice Hoffman, drinking my confidence, drinking my courage, and going out into the world and feeling courageous. Do magic on yourself. Do magic on your loved ones. Build up the light in your home. And let that be a beacon to the rest of your world. Your world, not the world at large, but your world. You know, it's that horrible, 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 horribly overdone quote of be the change you wish to see in the world, but build up the light in yourself so that you can give that light to others. And so that maybe that light will shine bright enough that you can see through some of the garbage and realize what news and what event and what societal occurrence is important so that you can keep your focus on that. And if it comes time to do protest magic, if it comes time to march in the streets, you'll be ready for it. You'll feel strong enough to do it. But man, if you're sending off a hex every single time something goes wrong in the news, you're going to feel exhausted, because there's never not going to be garbage going on in the news. There's never not going to be homophobia, xenophobia, racism, bigotry in the news. There's not ever going to be a day when fairness reigns, when justice reigns. There's never going to be that day. Because if you're waiting on humans to come together and sing kumbaya all around the world, it's not happening. But what you can do is craft on yourself. Build up the light inside of you. Rid yourself of unwanted garbage so that you are more ready to take on the world.
Inciting your riot.
The last show, and this seems so long ago, and probably because it was inciting a body riot. And it was all about body politics. It was a wonderful roundtable discussion that I was so privileged to be able to host. And gosh, it got a lot of feedback. You all really liked that show and you shared it a lot and you downloaded it a lot and you told people a lot about it. And I'm so, so, so grateful. Thank you so much. It has been a dream of mine to do that kind of show. And I realize that when the audience is largely pagan and they're tuning in to hear about pagan and witchy topics, you know, to do a show that has really nothing whatsoever to do with paganism is kind of a scary thing. Because you're not really sure if people are going to want to listen to it or sit through it. But man, you guys really responded very graciously. So thank you so much for that. I'm not going to read all the emails, but there were a few that stood out to me. Rhiannon Bodrin wrote in and said, thank you to you and your guests for such an exceptional discussion of body issues and politics. I feel like there could be multiple shows done about this very important topic. I particularly love how frank, sorry, I can't remember her name, is about her hair being a symbiote. I love that language. I believe that was Amanda. Because it so perfectly describes life with curly or textured hair. Curls are amazing, but short of beating them into submission, they have a mind of their own. It is not good for your self-esteem to live in a world where the only okay hair is straight and sleek and shiny, a world where I have actually had a job interview where the first words out of the interviewer's mouth were, "Wow, your hair is really curly." It is expensive to live in a world where the only hair care products that won't trash your hair are two times the cost of the major national brands and usually require a trip to a specialty store to obtain. It is an emotional roller coaster to exist in a world where finding a decent stylist can be as difficult as finding your soulmate and might cost you just as much. Being of European descent, I have a looser curl and a much lower volume of them to deal with than many people of color, but I can relate. Thank you for providing a platform to get people to stop and think about something so simple as hair and its impact on self-image and socioeconomic success. If I hear one more person compliment my curls, then ask if I've ever tried straightening them, I think I will strangle them. My heart breaks every time some well-intentioned mom says something along the lines of, "My kid has crazy curls. I wish their hair was more like yours." In hearing of said child, I want to scream and put my arms around said child and tell them how beautiful their hair is, no matter its texture, and that even on the most crazy hair days, they are enough. I then want to beat that mom over the head with her kid's detergent-laden shampoo and useless watered-down conditioner and tell her to stop abusing her kid's hair and learn to take care of it. Thank you for constantly challenging the status quo and helping get people talking about the little things that aren't so little. We need more of it in this world. Kitty wrote in and said, I feel like I should use a more familiar greeting, but you don't know me. I have been listening to your podcast for a while. It's gotten me through bus rides, 4 hours commutes to school, long days of independent work, but I digress. I've just finished listening to your Body Riot episode, and I was struck with when your discussion came to types. Warrior aesthetic really struck a chord with me. I've never considered myself to be a type, as I am attracted to a wide range of people, various ethnicities and body types. The warrior paradigm is so broad that it encompasses so much. It was a fascinating revelation for me. I will continue to riot with you and appreciate all the time you put into your works. They are thought-provoking and enjoyable. Like I said, there were a lot of folks that wrote in. Lot of folks wrote in on Facebook and on Twitter. And I can't possibly get to all of you guys here. But thank you all so much for sticking with the show and for letting me do stuff that's bold and challenging and non-pagan, and still sticking by me. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. This is a Patreon-supported podcast. I know that I talked about it at the beginning of the show, but if you have yet to realize it's a Patreon-supported podcast, I would not be here without the support of you guys. You keep this show running. You keep Inciting a Brouhaha running. You pay for all of the fees for the two shows. You pay for software updates. You pay for advertising so that we can make sure that people know that Inciting a Brouhaha is back. And you're helping us to save up to pay for some really much needed equipment upgrades for both of us, because now I live out in the country and internet is terrible and we need good equipment to make sure that we get you a quality podcast. By the way, the next episode of Inciting a Brouhaha is going to be about love spells. It's going to be a big, long, big, fat episode because, you know, we only do like 4 or 5 of them a year now, but we're doing them, which is great. For Patreon supporters at the $20 level and above, you are getting, you know, the big video version. And I think that we're actually going to be doing some casting of some spells on, you know, on the episode on video for you guys, so that should be fun. But otherwise, the edited version will of course always be free for you guys to listen to and download on the regular feed. A big special thank you to the folks at the top tiers that really helped to make sure that all of these fees and stuff are paid. Big ups to Danny Kinneberg. Danny, get ready, because the next episode of Inciting a Brouhaha is coming, and that means you get to guest on the show, because you're the only one at that level, so you get to be with us. It'll just be the three of us talking love spells and stuff. That'll be fun. Also, a big thanks to Andrea Santoro, or Metallica Mom. She's a Scentsy owner, and she has been keeping me very well stocked in all of the Scentsy goodies. You can see her shop like at Metallica Mom, Scentsy.com/Metallica Mom. And Carrie Beckler, who doesn't want me to promote anything of hers. I don't really know. Thanks, Carrie. Danny did the art for Inciting a Brouhaha, that really amazing show logo. He did that, and I love it. And he did this really fun thing. I put it out there. I was like, hey, if somebody wants to Photoshop me as a wizard on my way to school, that would be great. And he just did it. Like, he's a genius. He's a genius, and he does it for fun. Like, he's so cool. I can't wait to talk to him. Anyways, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope this was fun. It was a more lighthearted take. There's a lot of garbage going on right now, and I just wanted to put something fun out in the world. So I hope you enjoyed it. You can write into the show, Firelight, F-I-R-E-L-Y-T-E, at incitingariot.com. You can tweet me at Inciting a Riot. I'm on Facebook. You can find me, Firelight, or you can go to the facebook.com/Inciting a Riot podcast page. Please like, subscribe, rate, comment, all of the things on iTunes. We're also on Google Play, on the Google Play. So whatever a Google Play is, I'm on it now. So woohoo! I will be back in your feed soon. Of course, there's a lot going on in the world, and the riot wouldn't be the riot if I didn't talk about it. But I wanted to get this lighthearted show out before diving right back into the crap. So thank you guys for sticking with me. I'm going to leave you, but as always, I leave you with love and light.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.